Lawrence Schoenberg's interest in exploring consciousness, language, and memory led him to write a novel about the brain. For research, he volunteered at a hospital for brain-damaged patients, and he ended up writing a nonfiction book about a brain surgeon before completing his novel. That novel, Memories of Amnesia, has just been published. The story is told from the perspective of a brain surgeon who is the first to diagnose the early symptoms of his own brain disorder. In a New York Times book review, Diane Johnson described it as a novel in which a consciousness reports on its own deterioration. I asked Schoenberg to read an excerpt from the opening.
Brain damage is not always as grotesque as normal brains expect it to be. It's true that it can strike like a hurricane, but sometimes it's more like a gentle breeze, a subtle change of vectors that leaves you headed not in the opposite direction, but almost exactly where you were headed before. A charming eccentricity becomes obnoxious. Private habits go public. It gets a little harder to keep things to yourself. I've seen it begin with farting or belching, nose-picking, cursing, bragging, a lean to the left or a lean to the right, too many adjectives, self-absorption, visions of grandeur, arrogance, dogmatism, indecision, or its opposite. In one patient, the first symptom his tumor produced was an inability to admit mistakes. Another qualified everything he said. It's only one man's opinion, but it seems to me that there's nothing the brain can't use when it turns against you.
Is that what you think this book is about, what happens when the brain turns against you?
I would say that, yes. I would say that it's almost inevitable with any condition, that any brain, that it's eventually going to turn against you, though.
Now, I assume that when you were writing this book, you didn't have a brain disorder yourself. But what made you so acutely aware of your brain thinking about itself, about you trying to understand your own brain through using your brain?
I don't know whether I would accept that I didn't have a brain disorder. I didn't have a clinical brain disorder, but I have a brain. And I'm not sure that you can have a brain without having a brain disorder. And that was that... was really the basis of the book.
Well, what kind of normal brain damage do you think you were suffering from, or are suffering from?
Normal brain damage, for starters, to being a writer is an obsession with language, an addiction to description, confusion about memory between which divides the present from the past. Too much anticipation, too much desire, too much ambition. Any one of those could be called a brain disorder, according to my terminology, anyhow.
You are using in your novel medical brain damage as a metaphor for the issues of consciousness that you are struggling with. When you presented some of these issues to actual neurosurgeons, what did they think? Did they think it was acceptable to use brain damage as a metaphor for the issues you were dealing with?
No, I don't think so. I would say that most of them, would listen to me with a kind of bemusement and said it like one of them did. Well, the question's interesting, but I wouldn't say it's high on my list of priorities.
Which question might they be referring to?
Well, I was talking about normal brain damage. I was talking about the distinction between the clinical brain damage and normal brain damage, and it's a subject that interests them, but they are dealing, after all, with a medical condition, a clinical condition, a catastrophic condition, and it's almost they would consider it an indulgence to think about it in the way I do.
I'd like to ask you to read a section of your novel that I think will give a sense of the kinds of struggles this character with the brain disorder has to go through. This is some of the problems of language and memory and connection that he has. Would you read the passage?
This is taking place, as you know, with during the surgery at the end of the book, when he's working with his assistant and watching what's going on in the mirror. He's under local anesthetic, and he's talking about various ways that he tested himself using electrodes to measure different functions in his brain. Photographs could also activate other circuits in my brain. When I saw a lemon, I tasted it, and the taste produced the word, but when I was shown a baseball, I heard the crack of a bat, and then cried, not without conviction, hammer. When Eli presented a schematic drawing of the sky with stars and planets labeled, I heard several bars of silent night, then saw Edward holding the doors of the elevator and could not stop the word, elevator. Not all my mistakes had logic, however. Some, like Ranjit and Wellentush for a milk bottle and a kitten, were just babble, while others, like Airplane for a television set, seemed intentional, perverse, or both.
I think that passage brings up some of the challenges that writing this novel must have posed to you, because here you are writing about someone who's confusing all their language and is confusing the names of people, associates one word for the wrong object, and you had to find a way to write about all of this in a language that would show the confusion yet make some sense to the reader.
Well, it was a problem. I mean, it just about drove me crazy, if you want to know the truth. And it seems to me that if I erred in the book, I backed off from this. I didn't take it anywhere near as far as as brain damage can go into disorder.
Was this book therapeutic at all, or did it drive you nuts when it was finished?
Well, things that drive you nuts can be therapeutic in a way. I think maybe that was the most therapeutic thing about it. It drove me beyond any sense of order. If you deal with brain damage in any even the most rudimentary way, it seems to me that it just reduces any conviction of knowledge, any ideas you have, to ashes. And that's what it did for me. And that's, as you know yourself, I'm sure it's frightening, but it's also that is therapy to me, liberating you from your own ideas.
One of the characters in your novel is interested in all Eastern thought. She studies karate. She sits in meditation. And there's this constant interplay in the book between a kind of almost Zen Buddhist sense of identity and the sense of consciousness that the neurosurgeon has in contemplating the brain, thinking about the brain. Have you studied Eastern philosophy as well as brain disorders?
Quite a bit. I mean, I would say that's probably the essential foundation of the book. I consider that the greatest neurologists are probably were spiritual masters, that they knew more and know more about the brain as a whole than anyone who's approaching it in a scientific way. I make fun of it a little with the wife in the book. She's working on her brain in the same way that her husband, who's the neurosurgeon, is working on his. They're just taking different paths. Anyone that deals with neurology, I think eventually has to accept that the line between it and what we call mysticism is not so clear. It's dealing with the line between what's visible and what's invisible and what's material and what's immaterial. It's dealing with first cause, where the origin, how did this gesture originate, where in the brain did it originate, and then where did the cause for that particular pulse originate. What begins as a basically, easily, clearly defined scientific question quickly becomes, as I see it, spiritual or theological. Those questions drove me more than any other.
So what's your next project? Are you going to write about something very mechanical and factual?
I wish I could. I hope I can. I'm working on a novel that is broader in its comedy, and I hope a lot less ambitious than this one.
Right. Good luck.
Thanks very much.
Thanks very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Lauren Schoenberg's novel, Memories of Amnesia, is published by Paris Review Editions. This is Fresh Air.